And my topic is communication. It's a huge topic. And I'm going to break it up into two pieces. Today we're going to talk about communication in marriage or with your significant other, and how important it is. And next week we're going to finish with a big one. It's called conflict management, which we all need if we live with somebody, if we have a friend or a spouse. Those conflicts will come up, and how you manage them can make or break your marriage. So lots to learn. As we shared last week, Terry and I are coming in April up on our 50th wedding anniversary. So I jumped on the communication because it's super important to me. Terry has heard me say more often than he can count, communication is the key to a long and happy marriage. And we all need to be reminded of that. And it really is the key, because communication is not just what you say. Mm-hmm. It's the way you move your eyes, the way you twitch your face, the way you don't pay attention, the way you don't look at the person who's trying to communicate. It involves a lot of things, and each are important to making you feel needed, wanted, accepted, and loved. So it's big, and I've prayed about this and hope you get something out of it. So we all know this, but I'm going to start with 1 Corinthians 13:4-8, just the beginning. We all know this, but we all need to be reminded very often about God's definition of love. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It doesn't boast. It's not proud. It's not rude. And it's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. Love never fails. That's tough. It's beautiful, but it's tough in our day-to-day lives. So I want to get this out of the way first. A Christian should not marry a non-Christian. That's not what God's will is for us. We find that in 2 Corinthians 6:14. And God's will for us is to not have sex before marriage. 1 Corinthians 6:18. So that's what, we could put that with the love. And that's what God's will for us is. So marital happiness is not an automatic thing. It's even when both partners are Christians and in love. It takes work. Nobody skates through marriage. To make that bond a tight one, a unified bond, to walk your life out in unity, it takes effort. So we must grow with our mates rather than think we can look for a better one. We all know the rates of divorce in our country, and the rates of divorce for Christians are high too. And the key thing is to not make it part of your speech. It just doesn't come up. It's not an option. Terry and I have gone all these years, and we dated for several years before we got married. We entered into this very young, but that wasn't an option for us. There's hills and valleys in your life to come. When you have kids, there's hills and valleys. And divorce shouldn't be part of it. If that's your knee-jerk reaction, you're going to have a rough go of it. So many couples spend a lot of time talking at each other, but very little time actually talking to each other. Just because they're talking doesn't mean they're communicating. So genuine communication requires both speaking and understanding. Speaking refers to any means which thoughts, ideas, or feelings are expressed, whether by your voice, by your gestures, your body language, your facial expressions. It's all communication. Someone can tell you they love you and look in your eyes and you believe it. Someone can grit their teeth and say, I love you, dear. And you know. The words are there, but the meaning isn't there. So there's lots of things involved in your communication. Understanding involves not only hearing what was said, but also interpreting what was said according to the speaker's intention. A lot of miscommunication happens with that, because sometimes we say what we mean, but it's not perceived in the way we meant it. And there's all kinds of dynamics that happen, and to be aware of that, sometimes you need to explain things in a different way, so that maybe it could be perceived like you really want. The other person could hear your heart. Communication between males and females, or husband and wife, is complicated, as Bruce said, by the fact that men and women think totally differently. We perceive things differently and we respond differently. Generally, men are logical thinkers. Women are emotional feelers. Men speak what they're thinking and women speak what they're feeling. And men have a tendency to want to fix things. And that's really a strong issue with men. And a lot of times a woman just wants to say what she has to say. She doesn't want anything to be fixed. She just needs to get it out. But the man gets frustrated because he wants to fix it. He wants to help her. So sometimes there's a disconnect that way. So obviously men hear from a logical frame of reference and women from an emotional frame of reference. A man and a woman can hear the exact same speaker and perceive that message in two totally different ways. It's happened so often with Terry and I. This also happens when they try to communicate with each other. But all of us want three things. We want to be acknowledged. We want to be appreciated, validated, and we all want to be accepted. So we all come to our relationships with different baggage, maybe from family life when we were growing up. There's all kinds of things we bring to our relationship. Those are all things to be considered, and why people react the way they do as well. So these three things, acknowledgement, appreciation, and acceptance, are imperative to a loving relationship and are needed to get your partner to really hear you. They build trust, which is the foundation of a relationship, and without it, without trust, the whole structure of the relationship falls. So acknowledgement. Acknowledgement is something that it doesn't necessarily mean you're agreeing with your partner. So I think a lot of people think that, but it really doesn't. It means really that you hear that person and you can consider their point of view. Everybody wants to be approached, especially if there's a conflict, with empathy. So you want to at least, you know, don't get a defensive posture. You want to try and empathize with that person. At least know, like, where they're coming from, why they feel the way they do. That's acknowledging them. And say that you understand why they feel that way, but, you know, say your thing. Appreciation. That you tell your partner that what you like or appreciate about him or her. You should use this frequently, especially the longer a marriage goes on, the older we get. We just need that. Everybody needs that. If a man is so hardworking at his job, appreciate him for that. If a woman is, appreciate her for that. If she's raising kids really well, say something. If she looks particularly nice that day, say something. Don't just think it. If you're thinking something nice about somebody, this is not just spouses. This is what I believe you should do. If you're thinking something nice about somebody, tell them. It always makes their day. And to withhold that from someone you love, just because you see them all the time, those are the ones that need to hear it the most. They need to feel that appreciation. So 1 Corinthians 8:1 says that love edifies, which is to build up. So notice the good things. Just try to look at each other and notice the little things. So important. And then acceptance. A lot of people do bring a lot of bad stuff from their upbringing. Maybe they don't have much self-esteem, whatever. The thing that people want to hear or to feel and know when you're speaking to them and communicating with them is that you still accept them. You love them anyway. You might not agree with them, but you will always love unconditionally. So a key thing is, and Lori's spoken about this, to learn your partner's love language. Most people tend to do what they feel is their love language for your partner. But that's not their love language. It's, okay, I've told you all that mine is service, gifts of service, and acts of service, I'm sorry. And I say it all the time, if I get a clean car and a tank of gas, that makes me a happy girl. So it may not make you a happy person, but it does me. He knows that. And he makes sure, I know how to pump my own gas. But for him to do that, it's just a nice thing that he's noticed makes me happy. And he's great with that. He did, yes. My car looks great, and it's got a full tank of gas. He really does do this. So I loved learning about love languages because, you know, I think it really does help if you're conscious of that. All right, so there's three ways to be an effective communicator. One is a universal language. Smile. Stop scowling. You're with your loved one, the person you want to share your life with. Treat them that way. Smile at them every once in a while. It releases endorphins in people's brains. It will help your attitude and it will help their attitude. And another thing is mirroring your partner's body position. You know, that doesn't have to be a conscious thing because people generally automatically do that with the person they love. Is if you mirror their body position, you could tell if they're closed off or if they're open to you, all this thing. But that really helps. It gives a connection and a feeling of acceptance. We're not aware of those things, but we're all humans with human brains, and there's a chemical thing that happens in your brain. So try those things. Also, touch. Now, I'm not talking about sexual touch. I'm talking about just touch. It tends to break down defenses, and it makes women feel safe, makes them feel loved and not used. So sometimes when you're talking to each other, I know we sit on the couch together and we watch TV, and a lot of times, well, we have our dog in between us because our dog is a TV watching dog. But sometimes one of us will just reach out and touch each other's hand. Just connect. You don't have to have this huge major embrace or anything like that. Or when you're talking to each other, reach out and put your hand on them. Anyway, so I talked about before expressions and micro-expressions. Communication also involves deeds, like I talked about with Terry. And actions oftentimes speak louder than words. It's a saying, it's cliche, but it really is true. If your spouse just does something thoughtful for you, just something nice, they don't have to tell you anything. He brought flowers home the other day. He's pretty good. I'm going to keep him. But, and I said, what'd you bring those home for? And he said, no reason. So we're on day three with these flowers, and it's just one of those things that brightens people's attitudes and days. It doesn't cost you anything but whatever some flowers at the store would cost, but not even that. Just, it could be anything. Just a gesture. So, as I said before, every message contains three components. The content, what you're trying to say, the tone of your voice, very important, and your body language. And when emotions are involved, nonverbal elements are even more important than verbal. When the heat gets raised and you have a differing opinion, all those things, your tone, your facial expressions, are your eyeballs rolling, are you in a defensive pose, all matters. So they found out that 93% of the impact of our communication is done without words, which I totally believe. The verbal aspect only comprises 7% of your total message and what the other person is receiving. Your tone of voice accounts for 38%, and the remaining 55% is nonverbal. So keep that in mind, that if you're not having a successful conversation, look at your attitude, look at what you're conveying. Maybe that's the problem. And it also is what we're doing when we say it. So if someone is trying to tell you something, and Terry knows this because I look at them, pay attention to them. It's just like a common courtesy. Look them in the eyes, give them your attention. So if you're not careful of these things, it can lead to misunderstandings, hurt feelings, and arguments. And these are easy things to fix. So just because two people have a conversation with each other doesn't mean they understand each other, as you can see. And a two-way conversation doesn't guarantee communication. So communication, true communication, is the key to understanding your partner. And that's the goal, understanding. The goal is not to win. The goal is not your agenda. The goal is understanding, and things will fall into place. So problems arrive. So communicate love with patience, kindness, with being courteous, be polite, and be unselfish. Now, selfishness, you can't change your partner's selfishness if you have a selfish partner. You just can't. That's up to them. You can only change yourself. So whatever selfishness you're bringing to the mix, deal with it. And your marriage will go better. So understanding, as I said, that's the key. So when you listen to understand, you learn that there's more than one way to see things. Your way may not be the only way. Your way may not be the only correct way. And so the message you send to your partner, you want that to be that they feel like they're valuable and they have influence in your relationship. If you're a domineering person, yeah.
When you're ready, Nicole, to talk about converse with somebody, this relates a lot. But we also communicate via text or phone or video.
Exactly. Good point. Exactly. And actually, I worked on person-to-person communication, but you are so right. When you do that, when you interact by text, it's so easy. I mean, I like to text people instead of actually picking up a phone. But it's so easy to misread them. I have a sister that I probably am currently misreading. And it's led, our texting has led to a strain in our relationship. So, excellent point. So, when you listen, when your purpose is to listen to understand, if you have decided you're going to listen better, then you learn that there's more than one way to see things, as I said, and the partner gets the message that they're valuable, that they're worth talking to. You know, they're worth listening to what you have to say. You may find your partner boring, but they don't need to know that. Pay attention and listen to them like you're, you know, I always say that with kids. When little kids, we had one that was like this, and this is the way I was as a kid. If I saw a movie, I'd have to tell my mom every single thing in the movie. And I grew up with a mom that I always knew loved me, but she never paid attention to me. I shouldn't say never. She didn't pay attention to me. I didn't feel that way as a kid. I always felt that I was not worth listening to. And that's how I grew up. But I had two aunts that poured into me, and they paid attention to me like everything I was saying mattered. And it didn't, because I was boring them too, but they were the ones that I've taken all the way through my adulthood, that they made me feel like I did matter. And of course I mattered to my mom, but I didn't pick that up at all. So I always picked up that she listened to my sister, but not me. So, you know, I have told our son, who has a child like that, listen to her. You know, stop what you're doing and listen to her. So it's important for adults, too. It's not just little kids. If you don't start doing that in your marriage, if you're not like that, someday they may not be talking to you anymore. So these are all things that will help you have a long-lasting marriage, that each person feels valuable. So understanding the needs of the other person helps them to disarm anxiety. And you want to strive to understand your partner's point of view. Again, you don't have to agree with their point of view, but at least try to find out where they're coming from. So listen. In capital letters. If the key to communication is understanding, then the key to understanding is listening. We need to simply learn to listen before we speak. How many times, and I'm guilty of this, instead of listening, I'm thinking of what I need to say. I think we all do that to an extent. That's not listening. You may act like you're listening, but if your brain is thinking of the next thing to say, then maybe you're pulling the wool over the person's eyes, but you're not listening. You're not even trying to understand where they're coming from. So James 1, 19 and 20 says, "My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, for man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires." I mean, really, the talk is right there. Nothing blesses a person more than having them listen to you. And as I showed you, if you have a child in your life and they grow up thinking that what they had to say wasn't important enough for you to listen to, it affects them and who they are. It has affected me in a huge way. So I don't know if that's one of the reasons I wanted communication to talk about, but it is really vital. Stop what you're doing. Put your phone down. Look at your partner. Turn the TV off. Fold the book up or the paper. It's not a lot of effort. It could change a lot. So could it possibly be, if there's a little problem there, could it possibly be not your partner's listening skills that's the issue, but is your lack of speaking skills? A lot of people aren't communicators. They're quiet people. They don't know how to communicate. Maybe they never felt listened to. So they're not communicators. So engage your mind, your body, your intellect, emotions, your eyes and your ears in order to listen fully. Set aside your own agenda long enough to hear and understand the other person's. And you know, I have that problem. Because when I have a point to make, I want it heard. Terry can say that. And you know, communicating with your spouse, a friend, a parent, whatever, it's a lifelong journey. Nobody's got it wired. And you're all gonna, you know, it's forever. So I'm not standing here telling you that I'm perfect with this, and neither is Terry. So, you know, there you go. 50 years we've been working at it. We've been doing pretty good, but there are days and times that, you know, he may not feel like talking. I do. You know, there's just differences in human beings. So it actually is one of the most giving things you can do for the person you love. So, and here's another problem that a lot of people have. When someone is talking to you and telling you their heart, don't interrupt each other. Now that's a hard one. But it's true, because in a way, you're negating their feelings when you do that, because you have something to say. And that's more important than what they're saying. So I will interrupt you. And you negate their feelings. It's really, this whole topic is eye-opening. And I think we all know these things to be polite. You know, you do these things, but we don't do it. And it's just to be more aware of these things, and you'll have more successful relationships. But that's a key one. And a lot of times in marriage counseling, that's a really important problem, is when one is telling their story from their point of view, the spouse will interrupt them and say, no, that's not the way it is. That's the way they perceive it. And that's the way it is for them. So when someone's talking about an issue, try not to get defensive. I don't know if this is a guy thing, but a lot of guys, the first feelings will be a defensive posture, you know, with the conversation. That doesn't help things. So if you happen to be one of those guys or females, try to keep a lid on that, and try to, instead of having that defensive reaction, listen to what the person is saying, because they're probably not attacking you. It's just a kind of a knee-jerk reaction. It's a protection type reaction. So oftentimes what we dislike in others and we need to tell them about are actually weaknesses in our own life. So a common complaint that people in counseling have is, my partner doesn't listen to me, or my kid doesn't listen to me, fill in the blank. My brother doesn't listen to me, whatever. My sister doesn't listen to me. How about that one? So people really have a yearning to be heard and understood, and it makes them feel acknowledged, appreciated, and accepted. It's not a hard thing. It's just a simple thing. It can do wonders for a human. Okay, so these things, when you're connecting with someone and you're really listening to them, it's a point of intimacy in your relationship. So it makes you feel, that intimacy makes you feel safe, vulnerable, accepted, loved, and cared about. It helps people feel like they can open their heart and not have to guard it because they're not afraid of your reaction. They feel more able to share, and that's what you want in a spouse. And when people have no intimacy in their lives, oftentimes addiction is a danger. So that's an attempt to create intimacy through a relationship with an object. For example, alcohol, drugs, pornography, food, spending, etc. It's in order to give the person a relationship with something that we can control. And they happen most when people are in pain and they can't find true intimacy. If you don't know how to create and protect intimacy in your relationships, you'll have a growing pain where you start to look for self-medication. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about communication styles. Okay, we're all individual people. We all have individual histories. We're just who we are at this point in your life. You know, we could all do better, and so we should. So there's four main personality styles. You may be a little mix of some. One is passive. We all know passive people. I know so many passive women, and I don't get it because I'm not passive. I just am not that person. But they kind of go by the "you matter, but I don't" philosophy in life. They kind of shrink back, and they're kind of a long sufferer. And they hide behind that facade a lot of times because they're afraid of what'll happen if they really tell you the truth. And this style is motivated by fear. The other one is aggressive, which we all know aggressive people too. We may be an aggressive person. So they go by the motto like, "I matter, you don't." So it's the exact opposite of passive. But like a passive communicator, they're motivated by fear too. They kind of do the "I will kill you with my words before you kill me" type of personality. So I would say that we have a family member that comes to mind in Terry's family. He probably knows who I'm talking about. She's totally, I would put as an aggressive person. But it is motivated by fear because I know her background. I know her history. And she does go by the like, "I will kill you before you kill me" type of mindset. Then there's passive aggressive. So that's "you matter, not." So passive-aggressive people use sarcastic innuendos, veiled threats, manipulative use of scripture sometimes, and judgments that come in the form of counsel. Those are some of the examples of a passive-aggressive. That style is motivated by fear, too. So then we have the fourth one is assertive, which means you matter, and so do I. So this is not motivated by fear. The value of both parties are protected with this kind of a communicator. Both people in the conversation are powerful. And this style increases love and the foundation for mutual respect. When I share my feelings with you, there's an intimacy into me, and you get to respond to my heart. Obviously, that's our goal. Okay, communication in a marriage. As I said, it's the key, really, to success or failure in growing oneness in a marriage. In the experience of family counselors, 50% of couples who come for help have as their major problem an uncommunicative husband. And how many people, just, you don't have to raise your hand, how many of us know the silent man in the house? People can go for years living with the silent man. So if you have a tendency for that, be aware, your wife will not be happy. So if you refuse to communicate, then you refuse to share life, your life. And you end up living as two lonely people living side by side in the same house rather than as a unit, the one that God intended. One of my best friends had a marriage like this. The man recently died. They were just two people. They could have been just random roommates. Nobody talking to each other. And they lived that way for years and years and years. And it's one of the saddest things that you've ever seen. Neither person, both of them being lonely, and they have a spouse. So that can happen. So God said it's good for man to be not to be alone. It's not good for man to be alone. I need a larger font next week, I can tell you that. In Genesis 2:18. So even if communication doesn't come naturally for you, we have to do it. This is a choice. You can say, I'm a quiet person, and you can be a quiet person, but it's a choice for you to communicate or not to. And if you don't let anybody in, whatever way you can communicate, if you don't do that, you're going to be a lonely person. Because eventually, if it's a man, eventually she's going to stop trying to talk to you. So, do it, you know, just do it. If it's the wrong time, say, can we talk about this later? And do it. We can't truly, really know each other unless we communicate with each other. So your spouse, and I know this is, I know I'm generalizing here, but I know a lot of women that get angry because their husband doesn't do fill in the blank or say fill in the blank. She's never asked him. She's never told him that need she has, that she needs to hear or see or whatever. So whether you're a man or a woman, nobody can read each other's mind. You've got to communicate that. And you cannot be mad at your spouse for not doing something that you've decided you want done, but you never said. That's not fair, because it's not fair if they do it to you. So don't do that. So you must let your spouse in if he or she is to really know your heart and really know you. And of all people on the face of this earth, you want your spouse to truly know who you are. So obviously communication is a deliberate act of your will. We choose to do this, or you choose not to. If you're the quiet type, will yourself to be more vocal or share in, as Brian said, in writing, whatever way you can share, let your spouse in. It's just not, you'll never have the oneness in your marriage that you could have if you don't. So if you're a talker, which I'm a talker, as you can tell, Terry will tell you, women talk. He's got the stats. like bazillions more words in a day than a man does. So I fit right in. So if you're a talker, will yourself to listen better. Something I need to do better is to listen better. And that's equally as difficult because it's not our tendency. Our sweet spot is where our sweet spot is. And we can be lazy people and just live in our sweet spot. So your marriage can't achieve the ideal unless both partners choose to communicate. If you're a quiet person, try this. You can talk to your spouse about day-to-day lives. That's pretty bare bones. And if she asks you or he asks you how your day went, don't say fine. That's not communicating. Tell her how your day went. You know, you may think your day was pretty boring. Tell her how, what happened. Something had to have happened during the day. Try to communicate details, your feelings about what happened today. I mean, this is basic. So just ask your mate about their day. Ask your mate questions. Be interested. That's probably a hard one for people, but be interested. So problem solving or decision making, this is often where the difficulty starts. It's hard to make decisions in unity, especially if you have two like really different personality types. It's that is a problem that could be something that needs to be managed. but at least hear each other and your reasons for your opinions on that. The tough one is communicating when the pressure is on. When reason declines, emotions ascend, chaos can result. So, like I said, next week will be conflict management, and that's something you need with just if you're a human being in contact with another human being. Eventually there'll be conflict. So, but if you're actually living with that person, you need to learn how to manage your conflicts. So again, if you don't communicate your needs, they won't be met. And you can't get mad at your partner for not meeting your needs if you've never even said what your needs are. So keep that in mind. And try to communicate them without using anxiety and manipulation. Be polite, be kind to each other. You know, on that note, Terry and I still say please and thank you to each other. If one of us clears both of our dishes out for dinner, we say thanks. It's just, you know, a lot of people who are married, especially a long time, don't do things like that. And it's just, you were taught when you were a kid to be polite. So why wouldn't you just be polite to the person you love? Very simple, not hard. So here's some barriers to communication. We talked a little bit about that. Obviously, one is anger. So we all have tempers, and we also all have the responsibility to deal with our tempers. So when you feel anger rising, make a conscious effort to control it. And if you can't, you can't communicate effectively then stop the discussion until you can get your anger under control. Save a lot of fireworks and hurt feelings and misunderstandings. Another barrier is selfishness. You know, it happens. Selfishness happens. But it's a great barrier to marital oneness and unity. And I said before, it is true, you cannot make a selfish mate unselfish. You can only change your behavior. And once your behavior changes, oftentimes their behavior starts to change. And even if their behavior doesn't change if you're in a, like, eventually in a troubled marriage or what have you, if you are the only one that will work to make your marriage successful, it won't be what you would have had both people come together to work on this, but at least it'll be better than if nobody works to make it better. Another thing is lack of self-esteem. This produces more psychiatric disorders than any other fact that's been identified. Lack of self-esteem is the chief cause of depression, clinical depression in women. We all tend to fall into, we judge ourselves sometimes by the value system of the world. We're not of this world, but we live in it. So, I mean, beauty, brains, and athletic ability, you know, that's like, in this world, the Holy Grail. Well, you know, eventually you lose the pretty because you get old. You know, you lose your athletic ability or your whatever because you age. But you want that marriage to stay together, even though you've changed. You've changed in your abilities, your physical looks, everything changes. So those things can make, you know, if your value system for your spouse is after four kids that she looks like she did when she was 16, you know, you're not serious about your marriage because there's very few that can do that. So, and if you love her for her, I mean, producing children is not easy, let me tell you. So, you have to be yourself as God made you under his direction. Ask your partner to confide these feelings of inadequacy to you. I mean, those come in all different forms. I mean, I shared with you about, you know, an issue I had with my mom. You know, if you're suffering from inadequacy, your partner can help bring you out of it, because if they truly love you and value you and love you unconditionally, they love you like you are, like God made you. So anyway, learning to communicate well with your loved one is a lifelong learning experience, and if you want to keep that spark alive throughout your marriage, learn to communicate effectively. Learn to understand. Learn to listen. Learn to put your agenda aside to hear your partner. Those are all things we choose to do, and we have to do by a conscious effort.